Here's a question we get fairly often. If I take a policy loan, am I just borrowing my own money? The answer changes everything about how you'll use money for the rest of your life.
In the next 30 minutes, you're going to learn exactly how policy loans work, why they're fundamentally different from any other type of loan you could take, and how you can use the same dollar multiple times over your lifetime and never stop the compound growth.
We're going to destroy the biggest fallacy in the infinite banking, that you are paying to borrow your own money. We're going to show you how to take loans, set up a repayment schedule that is customized to you, and we'll show you how to redeploy the same capital over and over and over while it's still earning uninterrupted compound growth.
And here's what you'll miss if you skip this episode. You'll keep putting your capital in a place you don't control, which will force you to keep going to the bank and ask them permission to borrow money and pay interest to them that you could have earned yourself.
This is where theory becomes practice. This is where you stop being a consumer and start acting like a banker. Let's break it down.
All right. Hey, Paul, looks like you've done some work in the background there, man. That's looking nice.
Yeah. So that was this painting, if you're watching on YouTube, is the Prayer at Valley Forge. It's George Washington and his horse. So that was Tammy's retirement gift to me when we left the Army last year, finally. So anyway, took some policy loans out a few months ago to buy furniture because we basically bought all new stuff. And a bunch of that, or all of it, I guess, just came in yesterday. Well, it's been kind of trickling in, and they were like, hey, we're going to bring it all at once so that we don't have to keep bugging you every few weeks when a new item comes in. Anyway, so we have island chairs, we have rugs, we have blinds, we have, you know, and she hung up a bunch of our artwork and family photos and stuff like that.
So you didn't have much furniture in the house until just yesterday?
Not really. I mean, we had our beds, Carmela's room was done, Anthony's room was done, but as far as, we had no artwork on the walls, nothing hung up. There's still more work to do, but again, all of that was financed through policy loans that I took probably back in January or something. Yeah.
Nice, man. Well, we got tons of stories of that. I mean, everything we do now is through policy loans, so let's talk policy loans.
Yeah.
You know, before I had a policy, if I needed to finance something big, like, you know, furnish an entire house, it would be pay cash or walk into a bank and ask for, I mean, to furnish a house, you're talking probably six figures if you got to furnish from scratch easily.
For sure. Easy.
So you go in, you ask for $100,000. They're going to want to know why. They're going to pull your credit. They're going to check your income, verify your income, you know, 10 ways to Sunday. They're going to ask what you're using it for. They're going to demand collateral and, you know, maybe put another lien on your house. I don't know. But the bank is going to collect every bit of data they can possibly get their hands on. And then they're going to take their time and come back to you and say yes or no. Sometimes they know from the get-go, they're going to say no, but they'll still make you go through that process because that data is valuable for them. And we know clients who've done just that. They have perfect income, like, their debt to income ratio is very low, but they still get denied for one reason or another. Turn around and do it the way we do it, where I walk into my own bank because I'm the owner and I say, I need $100,000, and I'm not even going to say why. No credit check, no income verification, no asking what it's for. Doesn't matter. If I have that available in cash value, the company's going to loan me their money. I go buy my furniture just like you did, and then I'll repay it on my own schedule.
Right.
That's how it works.
You know, and your time is valuable. Dave, in this scenario, folks, wouldn't even have to talk to anybody. He can literally just log into his little client portal, which from whatever company he's going to pull the policy loan from, type in $100,000, hit submit. How does he want it? Cashier's check, direct deposit, obviously, right? We don't want to put big checks in the mail, generally, because the post office will lose it. Anyway, and, you know, a couple of days he gets his money, right? So time, you know, what's that worth to you? The other thing that made me think when you just, you know, brought up this example, Dave, was I keep getting these ads or these email, you know, from AMX for like a personal loan. Like, hey, you're pre-qualified for a personal loan for $50,000 at 13.9% interest.
Wow. Yeah.
Your payment will be, you know, whatever. And they've done all the math already. And I'm like, yeah, but I can get to money at 5.5 or 5.6 or 6 or whatever with no repayment schedule, with no hit on my credit, right? So there's just completely policy loans and just your, you know, other loans, 401k loans. We'll talk about that stuff too. Just completely different, right? It's just totally different.
Yeah, no hit on your credit, but also no hit on your personal balance sheet either. The banks don't look at those loans as debt.
Right. So, and they don't have to know about them.
And they don't have to know about, they don't know about them. It doesn't matter.
And the other thing you said, and this has nothing to do with policy loans, but it has to do with banking in general, was, you know, so I just put together that little business deal, get some money, some funds kind of trickle in over the last few weeks. And you wouldn't believe, you know, I'm having, you know, these are friends of mine texting me. They're like, the bank is asking me this and this and this. I'm like, oh yeah, they always do that when you wire money, because the money is leaving their bank. They don't want the money to leave their bank. So yeah, they're going to ask, they ask what it's for. And it may be regulatory or whatever, you know, Bank Secrecy Act or post 9/11 stuff. Who knows, right? But the bottom line is they really don't want that money leaving. So they give you the runaround and make you feel like, ooh, you can't really tell them what it's for. It's your money.
Yeah. They don't want that value leaving their books.
That's right.
I mean, how many people, maybe this has been you, if you're listening, you've called up, I don't know, your investment broker or something. You say, I need to liquidate some of my assets. Well, they're probably going to drag their feet on that. You know, I've heard stories, you know, some are great and they say, okay, if this is what you need, I'll make it happen. I'll move it to cash and you can take it out. Others will drag their feet. And it's interesting because maybe based on the time of year you call, you know, a lot of these brokerage houses operate and they earn quarterly bonuses. So if you're trying to get, trying to pull some of that value out from under their management towards the end of a quarter, expect to probably wait until that quarter ends and it rolls over into the next quarter, the beginning of the next quarter, before that money actually comes to you. So I've definitely seen that happen.
Yeah. There must be a mass exodus too when that happens. Like at the beginning of every quarter, it's like all the money's leaving, you know, especially in bad economic times when people need their cash.
Yeah. Well, let's talk about what cash value is. So, you know, anybody who has been listening for a while probably understands what cash value is. But in simple terms, cash value is simply the equity that you have in the asset, which is the death benefit. Just like your home, your equity in your home is the principal you paid down plus the appreciation. Like that's how much of your home you own, right? That's what the bank would reflect, that this is how much equity you have. Cash value is the same. It's just the equity that you have in the underlying asset, which is the death benefit in the case of whole life insurance.
Yeah. So, you know, put very simply, if you sold your home, you've paid this down. There's the sale price, you get the difference. So just like your policy, if you were to surrender the policy, which, you know, some people do occasionally, they quit because they don't understand what they're doing. Unfortunately, it's rare, but it does happen. They're going to get the equity of the policy. Now, in the early years, the equity, you know, Dave, they're going to be upside down a little bit. You know, premium paid in versus cash value, or the surrender, also known as the cash surrender value, also known as the surrender value. you might hear that, you know, in different ways, but the cash value is going to be different. Now, over time, it's going to, you know, run away from the premium that you've paid in. But so, yeah, that's what you're getting. You're going to get the ownership portion of that policy.
Right. Just like, you know, always going back to the house example, like a mortgage and how that works is a really great parallel. Because I had somebody just yesterday ask me, well, you know, when I pay my premium in year one, why don't I have access to 100% of that premium as cash value? Well, because you don't permanently own 100% of that just yet. Just like your mortgage payment. It's not, you know, your first payment doesn't mean you own that asset. You have to build up ownership of that asset over time, which means part of that payment if you think about it like that, is going to purchasing that asset and owning a piece of that asset. Another part of that payment is maybe going to support the company that, you know, gave that asset to, or, you know, offer that asset to you. But you're not going to have, of course, in the first few years, every payment you make is not going to create 100% liquidity of that payment, right? It's going to take a few years to get there. But it's one of those things where as long as you stick with it, you're either going to have access to everything you ever put in and a permanent death benefit. So I actually compared it to this. Let me know what you think about this. Typically, you go buy a home, you get a 30-year mortgage. It takes you 30 years to get 100% equity in that home, right? Or to really 30 years to get back everything you put in. Actually, you usually put in twice as much.
You're putting in what?
You're putting in way more. You're putting like twice as much as what it's worth.
And they
right? Because of the interest.
Yeah, and they disclose that. You have an amortization schedule. It's all those pages of numbers that come when you as part of your closing documents, right? If you look, you know, this was the original loan amount, you know, $1 million. You paid whatever, 3.8 or something, you know.
Right.
Or I'm probably way off on the math, but yeah, you get the point.
Like it's 6 to 7% where rates are basically double. I think most of the time you buy a $500,000 house, it's going to take you 30 years. You're going to pay $1 million to own that $500,000 house.
Right.
Well, with this, it's a little bit different. It's almost like you've paid off your house after 7 or 8 years. Let's say you hit that break-even point where every dollar you paid in is now accessible to you. Call it 8 to 10 years later. And from that point, now you have everything you ever put in, every single dollar. And right after that, you'll have more than what you put in, right? But you have every single dollar you ever paid in, and you have a permanent asset, that permanent death benefit that's going to be there for you, however long you live. So it's kind of like paying your house off in 10 years and then just letting it appreciate from there and not having to pay property taxes, not having to pay for utilities, not having to pay for upkeep,
all of that. Not paying taxes. And right. And the other thing is, you know, the value every single year, you know, the baseline value, I would say the guaranteed value of that asset every single year.
And it can't go down.
And it won't ever decrease, right? And then on top of that, there's a non-guaranteed value that's, you know, in our experience, quite reliable, right? If you look at the non-guaranteed value in your original illustration, you know, it's... interest rates are going to fluctuate, and that's going to affect the non-guaranteed side of your whole life insurance contract. But, you know, thus far, rates haven't really moved that much in the grand scheme of things. Yeah, the last 20 years, have, you know, compared to what our parents dealt with in the early 80s.
Well, you said it's been reliable in our experience. Our great-grandparents' experience, it was reliable. Like, if they were still
for
around.
Sure. If they only owned it.
If they had owned it, and maybe our great grandparents did, but that didn't continue down to the next generation and the next generation.
Yeah, they probably had like a George Bailey policy, $500 of equity, $5,000,
which was probably a big deal back then.
1946, sure.
Yeah, not bad. Well, let's talk the loan request process. I mean, here's how I do loans. I just log in online. I click on one of my policies. It says I have this much cash value available, and I request a loan up to that amount. It electronically gets deposited into my checking account within a few days. Sometimes it kind of depends, you know, probably on how many loans they're processing at the time, but sometimes within 24 hours, sometimes it's a few days. So I give myself like a week, you know, to go request a loan and get that money into my account. That's all there is to
it. Yeah, and no application, no underwriting, no approval process, no banker looking over your shoulder to ask you, what's this for? What are you doing with it? And I tell you, man, I'm in the process of moving my TSP over to self-directed accounts, right? And it's a bear of a process. You know, there was time on the phone, a couple hours actually with the trust company and TSP, like, you know, the government shutdown doesn't help anything, right? Because they're on minimal staffing or whatever. So it's just so stupid. And then they won't let you do anything until you've had this is TSP, an account listed for direct deposit for at least a week. You know, so you have to jump through all these hoops, right? Because they make it difficult because this is like Wall Street custodian, like, oh, we can't have the people moving their money out of our control. So I just logged in again and it's still pending, right?
Yeah. It's almost like these financial institutions, get politicians to write the laws in a certain way where now they can just blame the law. By regulation, we have to wait a month before we can do this.
We have to withhold 20% of income tax. We have to. We have to.
Yeah.
It's regulatory.
Almost like the laws were written in their favor. Interesting.
Yeah, it's really, oh my goodness. Anyway, I don't know if we should bring it up now, but so you can do the same thing with your 401k. Maybe we'll unpack this a little bit later, but those were kind of easy, but you get all the warnings. Hey, just so you know, you're borrowing your own money and that money is no longer going to grow, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. This will affect the growth. You know, your compound line could have been here and now it's going to be here or whatever. They're always just like little subtle, hey, just so you know, we don't want you to do this because it affects our bottom line. Oh, it also affects your bottom line. So we have a solution though.
Yeah. So solution. So when you go to borrow, so this is one of the biggest misconceptions out there, is that, like you said in the beginning, why would I pay to borrow my own money? You know, and that's what you hear from these anti-whole life people all over YouTube is, why would you pay to borrow your own money? Like, duh, that's the dumbest thing. Obviously, that would be pretty stupid if I was paying to borrow my own money. Why would I do that? That makes no sense, right? But in reality, you're not. You're borrowing the insurance company's money. Because like we said, your cash value is merely a number on paper that represents the equity that you have. It's not like there's a separate pile of cash value there. It's equity. Just like the equity in your home. You think the bank actually has all that equity stacked up in a vault in cash? No. No, that's gone. That, you know, we use your money to lend out to Joe across the street to buy his house. Right? Just like George Bailey talking about that.
That's right. That's right. I would push back on them and I would say, you're always paying to borrow your own money. You just don't realize it.
Yeah.
And that wasn't that brilliant.
You are paying, and it's interesting. You're paying something, but it may be not how you typically think of paying. No, you're not paying interest when you use cash, when you use the cash that you have in the bank.
Yep,
but what are you paying? A little thing called opportunity cost.
That's right.
What are you giving up? Yeah, it's not extra money out of pocket, but it's what you're giving up, what you're not having come back to you. That's the real cost.
And Dave, this is something that I never, before I got really into the IBC space and started just to, you know, really think about money and mature in my financial acumen, was nobody ever considers that. They hand over cash and they're like, yep, I don't have a bill. But they never think of the other side of that coin. They don't even consider it. Like, oh, yeah. I could have done this.
You know why? Again,
Because
it's emotionally comfortable. It's comfortable to not have any payments, not have debt, not have anything hanging over your head. But where does comfort usually lead us in life? It usually leads you to discomfort eventually. If you're seeking comfort first and foremost, you're going to end up uncomfortable. Like with your health, if you seek comfort, I'm just going to eat comfort foods because it's comfortable. Or I'm not going to exercise. I'm going to hang out in my sweatpants and sit on a couch instead of just walking on the treadmill or going for a walk or hitting the gym because that's comfortable. But what does that lead to? It leads to being obese and very uncomfortable and unhealthy down the road. Same thing with your money.
Oh, I got my biological age test back yesterday. I'm 33.6 years biologically.
What?
Not bad.
You're 13 years younger than your actual age?
Yeah.
Wow.
That's what they told me even though I have the worst cholesterol, but I have one marker that's, and this is really off topic, but I think it's important to talk about what is called lipoprotein A, lipo A. It's not something that's typically tested. So I joined this, you know, one of those boutique, whatever places that does, like, they test everything, right? And I think you might have done something like this too.
Yeah.
Genetic markers and all this stuff. And I have this one marker that, and I've known about this for a few years because I got it done in the Army, but it's so out of whack. it's really bad. Like, the highest level is supposed to be like 75. I'm multiples above that. Like, anyway, but yeah, it's in my bio, other than my, like, lipid panel. So I talk about this.
Well, I'll have to tell Hannah, because she was just telling me yesterday she's 9 years. Her biological age is 9 years younger than her actual age.
Yeah.
So I'll tell her. Well, Paul's 13. So it sounds like you got some work to do.
Yeah. I don't know. Maybe. I don't know why, because based on my cholesterol numbers there, it shouldn't be. But everything else was, like, good. All the hormones. I thought I had cortisol levels out of whack. They're perfect.
So it is true. The 40s are now the new 30s. So there
That's
you
right.
go. You heard it here first. That's proof. That's scientific proof.
Yeah. So here we go. I mean, I'll probably drop dead tonight, right? Like, massive widowmaker coronary.
But, you know, see, you've chosen uncomfortable things in life, though, to be healthy. Like, it's not comfortable to go to the gym when you don't want to. It's not comfortable to eat healthy when there's so much good tasting unhealthy food. But it's the same with money. You know, it's very comfortable to pay cash because now emotionally, wow, I don't have a bill. I have this car and I don't have a car payment. That's great. I mean, that is great, right? But is that comfort worth the opportunity you're giving up by actually being able to earn on that cash for the rest of your life, which is what this concept does for you, the infinite banking concept.
Yeah.
Or if you were to first put that cash as premium and capitalize your system, your policy over here, you let that cash compound for you for the rest of your life through guaranteed growth, through dividends that have been paying out for well over 100 straight years. And you never spend it. You just leverage it for a line of credit from the insurance company for whatever you want, whenever you want.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. I like what you said there. And I go back to my first clients, and they're good friends of ours. And, you know, I talked about it on this podcast where they, you know, had a construction loan. They ran into a little issues, but, you know, cash, because they had paid off the home they were living in, tried to build the other one. And I was like, I told you, like, and then they just did it again. Mm-hmm. So now I'm trying to convince them, like, okay, you should. And I think you would agree with me that, okay, you don't have a mortgage right now. You should pay a new policy or policies on the children, on yourselves, whatever, that mortgage payment, what it would have been, 30 year at 800 grand or whatever.
Because you're already used to paying it anyway. So
correct.
What else are you going to be doing with that money?
So that in 10 years, all that home equity has been moved into a place that you no longer have to liquidate to get to and use.
Nice.
So when you build home number three, the permanent retirement home, you've got your existing policies, which are now, whatever, 15, 16 years old. And you've got these new ones that are a decade old and all the cash. So anyway, we're in negotiations. We'll see.
Yeah.
But
there you go.
To me, that's perfect clarity. That's obviously what they should do. Obviously, the right path from the IBC perspective. It's so clear to me. That's what you should do. That's what I would do.
And these are people who already have policies.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So, I mean, that's the thing about this is maybe you have a policy right now and maybe you're still not thinking like a banker. It's a journey. Just because you got one policy in place, some people just set it and forget it. I'm going to fund it. I'm not going to think about it. This is one of those things where you do want to think about it. You do want to think about, is this the right time to use a policy loan versus any other way I might finance something?
Yes. And I posed this question on LinkedIn or Facebook last year, the year before. Is it better to have $1 million home that's paid off with no mortgage, right? Or is it better to have $1 million of whole life insurance cash value that you can get at the, you know, click of a button? What's better? Who's in a better position?
Who's
would
in
argue
a better,
that the person who is practicing IBC, who has $1 million of whole life insurance cash value, yeah, they get $1 million mortgage. Who cares? They could pay it off at any time, right? So they don't really have, I think it's better to have the liquidity. It's clearly better to be liquid.
Yeah.
Flexible.
Who's in a better position? Who's at less risk? Who's got more flexibility? You know, I mean, you got a home paid off, but you funneled all your cash into there. Now something big comes up or an opportunity or an emergency. And now you got to go back to the bank and ask for permission to access that equity that you supposedly own.
And the last thought on this, I know we've kind of gone off topic, but it does have to do with loans, but is eventually, you know, as we all mature and we've been practicing IBC 20, 30 years, at some point, maybe you have enough liquidity and you can have the house paid off and you can have both. So now you have a real, you know, big warm and fuzzy. But in the early days, I still think it's always going to be better to just liquidity, liquidity, liquidity over, you know, paying off the car faster than you should or paying off the student loan faster than you need to. I think you should prioritize the construction of your own capital first, always.
Yeah. Yeah, anyway, always.
Enough on that. Sorry. Every dollar that you capitalize in a dividend-paying whole life insurance policy or policies is a dollar that will work for you for the rest of your life. A whole life insurance policy loan is nothing like a 401k loan. In a 401k loan, you are borrowing your own money, which means that money is no longer working for you. In a whole life insurance policy, when you borrow $50,000 against the value of your whole life insurance contract, that $50,000 loan comes from the life insurance company's general fund, which means the money inside your policy continues to compound uninterrupted. Let's go over how a policy loan actually works. The beauty is it's ridiculously simple.
Okay, so we talked about how policy loans work and how what your cash value actually represents. But here's really part of the power is those dividends, because we are using a mutual whole life insurance company, right? Which is different than a stock company. Stock pays dividends to stockholders. Mutual life insurance companies pay the dividends to the owners of the company, the mutual owners, which is the policy owner, you and me. So dividends, we prefer, so there's a couple different types. We won't get into too much detail, but there's direct recognition, non-direct recognition. One company directly recognizes loans when they pay dividends. Another company does not recognize loans, meaning that if they don't recognize the outstanding loan balance when they pay dividends, they're paying dividends as if there is no loan balance. So you get the full amount of the equity that you have or the cash value. You get a dividend on that full amount, whether you have any of that leveraged or not with the insurance company. Those are the kind of companies we prefer. Not saying it can't work with a direct recognition, but you know, our preference is non-direct recognition. That's where my policies are.
Yeah, same with me. I don't own any direct recognition policies at all. We have a lot of buddies that do, and you know they'll say it doesn't matter or whatever, but you know, if you're borrowing against the policy early on, it's going to matter a little.
It's going to matter a lot, I think.
Or maybe
based
a lot.
On what you expected it to look like versus what it does look like 10 years down the road. It could
that's be a great point.
Pretty different.
Yeah, I think you're going to, you know, you borrow against it on a direct, you're permanently changing what it's going to look like.
All right, let's talk policy loan repayment, because that's a big topic. People say, oh, well, I'm going to take a policy loan, but don't I also have to repay that? Well, of course, if you're playing honest banker, technically, do you have to repay it? No. Why? Because the company is going to get paid back when you die. You know, they're guaranteed, they're creating a guarantee to pay out a death benefit no matter how long you live. And if you owe them any money from taking loans that haven't been repaid on the day you die, they're simply going to get their money back at that time from that death benefit, and then pay your beneficiaries the remainder, the net amount. I'm not saying they don't care if you repay. It does help the general portfolio of the company if you repay your policy loans one way or another. Banks, when you go in and get a bank loan, there's a structured amortized repayment schedule. You cannot miss a payment. If you miss a payment, it dings your credit. It dings your history with that bank and your marketability with that bank. it could, you know, trigger a collateral collection on their part. They have the legal right to go collect that collateral because you missed a payment. All of that. When you borrow from your own system, from your whole life policy, you borrow from the insurance company, those repayment terms are 100% up to you. So how do you, so Paul, there's a couple different ways that you know, Nelson talks about a very structured repayment where you can do that with a company. You can set up auto draft. I want to pay $500 on the 10th of every month, and they'll automatically draft it and apply it towards your loan until it's paid off. Or there's a flexible option, which is really what you and I prefer, because it just keeps things kind of simple, but it's really whatever's best for you and your lifestyle. So, you know, how do you personally do repayments?
Yeah, you know, mine come in like randomized chunks based on cash flow, right? If I have, you know, 1 month I have more expenditures than anticipated or something because Carmela drove the truck through the wall of my garage the other day. I'm not joking.
Wait, does she have a learner's permit right
she has
now?
A or permit. She just
yeah.
She has a learner's permit.
So did she Luckily, get the gas still, and the brake mixed up?
Yes. So she's used to driving the Tesla. This is going to be a sidebar, but we had a bunch of unpacked boxes on that garage wall still in between like two windows. So we had a couple of Yeti coolers, some unpacked boxes. Those things acted as cushion for the truck going probably, I don't know, 6 or 7 miles an hour. But it caved in my bumper, my steel bumper on my Rebel. So that's in the body shop. So $1,000 deductible and whatever. It's like $3,200 worth of damage on my perfect vehicle that is no longer perfect, right?
Kids are expensive, anyway, man.
So that was nice. she's gonna work it off. I was like, this is you owe me $1,000 plus the depreciation value on the vehicle. Anyway, so I won't forget either. I won't forget.
Yeah, anyway, so let's say you took a loan to go cover that bill. How are you paying that back?
Yeah, just through my normal cash flow, my normal savings. Like, here's why I think this is going to be productive, right? Let's say on my next premium that's due, I'm not siloing the cash somewhere else, right? I'm taking all available cash flow and I'm sending it against one of the policy loans, right? Maybe the smallest one or the highest interest rate policy loan, because I have a couple that are just slightly different, right? So that's where I'm sending all that extra cash, right? Come premium time, if I have to borrow against one of the policies to pay a different policy's premium, so be it. I might have to do that this year just because I've had a large amount of expenditures to get this house, you know, fully put together, right? Nope, no problem, right? I look at policy loans as just pulling money from savings. And I'm now just going to put money back in savings. I'm going to replenish what I took out. And I'm paying some interest to the life insurance company that I part own. So I don't have a problem with it. I'm benefiting both directly through dividends and policy growth, guaranteeing of the collateral. But I'm also benefiting in other ways in that I'm controlling the entire scenario, right? If I can't make a payment this month, who cares? They don't care.
Yeah. So it sounds like, you know, if I'm listening, it sounds like maybe you are talking out of both sides of your mouth, because you're saying when it comes to bank loans, like a mortgage, why would you pay, you know, you're telling people don't pay that off early. Why would you want to give that money back to the bank faster than they're asking for it? But when you're talking about repaying policy loans, you're saying I'm going to pay these back as fast as possible. Why the difference?
Oh, I love this because I want to use the money again. Right. So when I repay a policy loan, everybody, like I make $1,000 repayment, let's say. Right? Well, a couple of weeks later, I could pull that $1,000 right back out to go use it for, something broke and I have to go fix it, whatever. I want to use the capital again. And I also want to reduce my interest costs. Why wouldn't I? It'd be silly for me not to be. And that's why we tell folks, like, if you've got outstanding loans, like, and you're siloing like the next year's premium payment over here in like a 2% savings account, don't do that. Repay the loan. And then when you have to pay the premium, if you have to pull a partial policy loan, so be it. Who cares?
Yeah. Again, that goes back to that comfortable mindset. It's very comfortable to to separate that and say, well, I have an outstanding loan, but I'm not going to use this money to repay it because I need this money to pay the premium when it comes due. Well, that's comfortable, but it doesn't make financial sense. It makes, like you said, the reason there's that big difference between paying a bank loan off faster versus paying your policy loan off faster is exactly what you said. As soon as you pay that money back, it goes towards the principal of the loan. Therefore, it becomes available again to use very quickly. So it's fun. It's almost like it's a gamification to repay loans. I'm excited. These are the only loans in my life I've ever had where I'm excited to pay them back, and I'm going to do everything I can to pay back as much as possible every month. Because, like you said, it's reducing the interest that I'm paying, so I'm saving money on interest, and it's becoming available for me again whenever I need it.
And this goes back to the mindset and the concept of ownership. You own the policies. They're your personal financing system or your banking system. You want to treat that system in the best way possible. You don't want to abuse the system, right? It's yours. You want it to thrive, right? And this is how we help our systems thrive. I put all, again, I think a simple way to do it would be take all your excess cash value or cash flow after expenses and put it against loan A and then loan B, loan C, et cetera, until they're all replenished. And if there's some, again, if there's some loans that need to be taken to pay premium, who cares? Like,
yeah, exactly. So let's go back to that a little bit, because I think there are a lot of people listening. If you're listening and you have a policy, and if you have a policy loan and you have a premium you're paying up, you're saving up to pay when your next premium comes due. Let's think about this mathematically. Let's say you have a $50,000 outstanding policy loan and you have a $20,000 premium coming up. So if you took that $20,000 and you repaid your policy loan, you would end up with a $30,000 outstanding loan when your premium comes due, right? But then you got to take a $20,000 loan to pay your premium. So then it comes time to pay your premium and you need to take a $20,000 loan because you haven't saved it up. You've used that to repay your loan. So you take a $20,000 loan. Now you got your premium paid and you have a $50,000 loan again. Well, that's the same situation as if you kept a $50,000 loan, saved up your premium over here and paid your $20,000 premium, you still have a $50,000 loan. The difference is in that time that you were saving up your premium over here in somebody else's bank, you could have been reducing the interest on your outstanding balance by saving it up inside your policy. So it just makes more financial sense. You'll be better off if you do what you said, which is every spare dollar you have goes towards repaying a loan. And once your loan's repaid, then yeah, start stacking that money aside to pay the premium.
Yes, absolutely. Now that it's, once you understand how the mechanics work, it'll become very, very clear that that's what you should do.
So the question becomes from some people is, what if I never pay my loans back? Well, as long as you got income coming in, I suspect you're going to have cash flow to pay your loans back, whether it's a little bit at a time, whether it's in chunks over time, maybe it's a future windfall where you can pay it back. But let's say you're 70 years old, you start taking cash value loans and you decide never to repay them because you're on a fixed income and you know you've saved this capital up and you just want to spend it. Well, that loan balance will be there and it'll get bigger because of interest that rolls over and because of new loans and whatever. You'll never be able to take a loan for more than the cash value that you have available. And the cash value will never be greater than the death benefit, which means there will always be a death benefit remaining that can pay off your outstanding loans and leave some death benefit for your beneficiary, however small. There'll be something there.
That's right. Yeah, Dave, I think this is, you know, it's fairly simple. IBC is very simple. Just, you're already disciplined. Just continue that discipline. When you take loans, make sure you've made provisions to have some sort of repayment, whether it's on a schedule that you create, or it's just through random cash flows, or maybe a windfall, you know, because you're doing an investment or something. So just, you know, make provisions to repay that loan. You don't need someone else telling you when you should make repayments. You make payments when it makes sense for you based on cash flow. The banker makes the rules. That's not irresponsible. That's banking.
So one of the most effective ways to grow wealth is to never spend your own principal, right? Don't spend your own money. Put your money somewhere, allow it to compound for you uninterrupted for the rest of your life, and simply leverage it to use other people's money. Never spend your own principal. Use other people's money. It's that simple.
So if you're thinking about getting a policy and worried that you're going to be locking up your money, you're not. These policies can be designed specially for you to maintain the liquidity that you need. Over time, this is the most liquid, flexible, tax-advantaged wealth system ever designed for you and me. Because at the end of your life, your kids just don't inherit money. They inherit a banking system. A family bank that's been lending, repaying, and redeploying capital for decades. That's generational wealth. That's the infinite banking concept.
Banks make money by lending the same dollar multiple times, you know, through fractional reserve lending. Now, while you and I can't create money from nothing, we can emulate that banking function by putting dividend-paying whole life insurance in place, putting the infinite banking concept as a system into our lives, and get the same use of our dollars over and over and over while they continue to compound every day for the rest of our lives. Hey, until next time, everybody, control your capital.
Or somebody else will.